Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Then you look at the same time, the same day that Susan Rice is speaking on behalf of the president, on behalf of Secretary John Kerry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad someone is. And Lord, you know, if you go back and listen, there was a word, there's a prophetic word given where God showed me very specifically, John Kerry, showed me the time that he would be talking. And when he talks, remember, I said, this is the time he's going to talk. And when he finishes doing what he's doing, it's not going to be good for Jews and Christians. Mm-mm. And look at this. This man is stirring up all kinds of things. And the end result is, you know, more hatred towards Israel and the greatest persecution probably in the history of Christians across the land.
Yeah.
And you know, you're looking at 12 million Jews on the face of the earth. I mean, and there's 7 billion folks. So when you say more Christians are being persecuted, that's a lot of folks. It's a lot of folks being persecuted across the land, and they're not even mentioning it. So finally, there was this one particular position that needed to be filled at the executive branch. The president needed to fill it, and it was the position of religious persecution. You know, somebody that oversees religious persecution is like, okay, there's rampant persecution from religions across the world right now. Including, you know, Islam's fighting Islam. You have radical Islam fighting against right. Christians and Jews. You have, it's just all over the place. And it's like, you're not filling that one office. And so finally, you know, according to CBN, they appoint somebody, and they appoint Rabbi David Saperstein. And, he's the first, Jew ever to be appointed in that position. It's like, I can't help but just feel, you know, and I'm excited about having somebody in that position because I've seen there's one thing that the Jews understand. They understand the Holocaust and they understand persecution, and they're good about getting in there, and they helped America get past its past persecutions of folks that was happening in our own nation. But I can't help but feel, I hope he didn't get invited like Naboth to the table so that Jezebel can get his land, Israel. But anyway, take a look at this. This is great. This position's filled now by Rabbi David Saperstein.
Thanks, Ephraim. President Obama announced today his intent to nominate Rabbi David Saperstein as the next ambassador for international religious freedom. The position has been vacant since former Ambassador Susan Johnson Cook resigned in October. Rabbi Saperstein has spent his career in Washington focusing on social justice and religious freedom issues. Religious freedom advocates are applauding the choice. In a statement, Dr. Russell Moore, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, said, Rabbi Saperstein is a respected thinker and leader who brings gravity to this important task. The ambassador for religious freedom monitors and speaks out on religious freedom abuses worldwide. The State Department post was created by Congress in 1998. If he is confirmed by the Senate, Rabbi Saperstein will be the first non-Christian to hold the job. And that news comes as Secretary of State John Kerry released the 2013 annual report on international religious freedom. An estimated 76% of the world's population live in countries where religious freedom is restricted. Kerry said the U.S. has to take a strong stand against those violations.
Around the world, repressive governments and extremist groups have been crystal clear about what they stand against. So we have to be equally clear about what we must stand for. We stand for greater freedom, greater tolerance, greater respect for rights of freedom of expression and freedom of conscience.
A key note in the 2013 report is the large number of displaced members of religious communities, including entire Christian communities in Syria and Iraq, that have been forced to flee their homes due to persecution. Earlier, CBN's Ephraim Graham spoke with Chief International Correspondent Gary Lane about today's religious freedom news.
Gary, tell us about this report. What does it show?
Well, some of the same things that the report in the past years has shown. The big culprits, China, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, Iran, even the Uzbekistans, Pakistan, people, countries like that. Mm-hmm. But I think the significant thing this time around is the State Department is saying for the first time in recent memory, they've seen this mass movement of religious groups of people, mm-hmm. Including Christians from Syria, also other areas around the world.
Wow, we know that the president has finally selected a religious freedom ambassador.
Yes.
How important is this move?
It's David Saperstein, Rabbi David Saperstein. He's been involved for many years in religious freedom efforts. It's significant, Ephraim, because if you're really committed to religious freedom, you need a spokesperson. You need a point man in the State Department or woman, mm-hmm. and this person needs to be someone who goes from country to country, investigates, and puts pressure on these countries. Without it, what kind of policy do you really have? What kind of commitment do you have? So really, I think it's more symbolic than anything. It shows a commitment mm-hmm. on the president's part that has been lacking.
Well, indeed, this new ambassador will be looking at the report. The report equates what's happening with Christians to what's happening to other minorities. But are the situations equal?
You know, it isn't the same. If you look at the Yazidis in Iraq, you look at the Ahmadiyyas in Pakistan and other groups, Shias and Sunnis against Shias and so forth, it isn't quite the same. Keep in mind, Iraq alone, you had almost 1.5 million Christians there many years ago before the U.S. invasion. Now we're lucky if there are 350,000. Mm-hmm. In places like home Syria, at one time you had 160,000 Christians. Now maybe less than 1,000. It's a true holocaust against Christians in the Middle East, and the State Department really isn't saying that.
I tell you, we know the Islamic State had not taken over northern Iraq until this year, so
yeah,
that's not included in the report.
Yeah, this report is 2013.
But Christians there are being targeted for extinction. Tell us about the symbol that the Islamic State is using to tag Christians.
Yeah, what these Islamists have done is they've painted this symbol. It's the 14th letter in the Arabic alphabet, the letter Nun, which stands for Nazarite, Christian. Mm. If you're a Nazarite, you're a Christian. So they would paint this on buildings there and businesses to mark Christians for persecution. Mm. Either you have to pay a jizya tax and live under Sharia law, you have to leave, or you convert, or you die. Those are the four options that you have. So this was a symbol marking them for persecution.
And you've actually created your own symbol highlighting a similarity to World War II. Tell us about that.
Well, Ephraim, my father told me years ago, and he was a World War II veteran, he said, you know, history has a strange way of repeating itself, especially if we don't learn the lessons of history. And I looked at that, I remembered that, and I said, you know, this is very similar to what was happening in World War II. The Holocaust against the Jews by the Nazis in Europe. Today, we're seeing Christians in the Middle East, a holocaust against them. So I just combined the two, the yellow Star of David, which the Jews were forced to wear under Nazism, and today, of course, the letter Nun. Oh. And this is the letter Nun is taking off. Christians around the world are using this on their Facebook pages now.
All right. That's good to know. Thank you so much. Always appreciate your insight. Mm-hmm.
So Rabbi Saperstein is now in this position to overlook religious persecution. And we want to find out a little bit about him. Let's just, when we get back from a break, we're going to just find out who now is over this religious persecution that's taking place, where they're putting marks on Christians' houses saying that they're Nazarites and you have to either convert, you got to go into servitude and pay the jizya tax, you know, to the temple, Islamic temple, or you've got to
die.
Leave or die. You know, leave or die. And it's like, okay, that's not good. And we also want to talk about the idea of using the mark that the enemy's putting on Christians' houses for you to wear on your Facebook or your collar. And it's like, to me, I'm just thinking, like, I wouldn't necessarily do that. But let's just talk about that. We are looking at from a Christian perspective, from a Christian and a Jewish perspective, the new appointment to the position of overseeing and looking out for religious persecution in the world on behalf of America is David Saperstein, Rabbi David Saperstein, who just got appointed, nominated. He has to still be accepted. His nomination has to be accepted. And so you just want to think, you're like, wow, you know, this is like the first this is like, what's the basketball team that LeBron went back to?
Oh, Cleveland.
Didn't they hire the first Jewish NBA coach?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. And it's like America just appointed our first Jewish man to be in this particular position to look over religious persecution. I can't even think of the name of the position there, but their responsibility is to look over that. You can find that, John. And so it's like, wow, who would know better than somebody that's Jewish that would understand unless they were George Soros,
right?
Who is fundamentally, you know, against Israel for some strange reason, and kind of like he's for himself maybe in his concept of the world. And so it's important to understand that because we totally are for Israel, we're for the Jewish people, and but we do have to understand that everybody, as you read in the Old Testament, when you're reading about God's folks, those were all Jews, and Korah was a Jew, Baal was a Jew, Judas was a Jew, and Jesus was a Jew. So, I mean, so it's like this mindset of many Christians are, it's like, do no wrong. And it's like, no, human beings just like us. Everybody's human beings.
Right.
And we're to honor Israel, stand up for Israel, defend Israel, defend the Jewish people, and help them, but worship God and worship Jesus Christ and follow his lead in the context of that. And so you have to understand, if you haven't been to Israel yet, you'll understand. You know, everybody's not walking around on clouds over there, you know, singing songs
or
playing harps. It was wild, wasn't it?
It was wild.
It was very wild. And, you know, as Christians, we understand that it's because their eyes have not been open to Yeshua, Messiah, Jesus as the Messiah. And so our eyes are open to that. And we understand that the Jews brought us the word, and that, you know, we love Israel, and we want to, we know there's going to be a moment in time where God's going to just, you know, do a wonderful work in a powerful way as their eyes are open, seeing Jesus as the Messiah. And until that day, we just stand together. And after that, we stand together. But we need to look at this particular person as a human being.
Religious freedom ambassador.
He was a religious freedom ambassador, and he has went around the world, reports are, you know, defending religious freedom in different places. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking here from, you know, Wikipedia and talking about some of the things that Rabbi David Saperstein had been a part of. He's a rabbi, lawyer. He's a Jewish community leader, has been. He served as a director and chief legal counsel on the Union for Reform for Judaism. Reform for Judaism. And Religious Action Center. He is... one of the things that stand out the most to me is he currently co-chairs the Coalition to Preserve Religious Liberty and serves on the board of the NAACP. And this is the thing that stands out right here, this next thing. And People for the American Way. So he is a co-chair on People for the American Way. And so People for the American Way, what is it? It's a modern, according to Wikipedia, it's a modern progressive advocacy group in the United States of America. And it's like, did George Soros just get appointed to to look over the persecution of Jews and Christians?
Wow.
You know, and if you're seeing this picture, this is not George Soros. This is Rabbi David Saperstein, and he is speaking at the World Economic Forum. And if you've been listening to the prophetically, some of the prophetic words that have come out, you know, things are going to begin to fall. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. You have to ease down the economies gently, as George Soros said. And we need to get rid of these boundaries, these borders. We need to have open society. We talked about that with Hillary Clinton, that George Soros, who is a Jew, is openly reports are against Israel.
Allegedly. Hungarian born, Budapest.
Yeah, Budapest. And, but also is the financial chair or whatever you call that on the board of the exploratory commission for Hillary Clinton, whose daughter, Chelsea, got married at George Soros's house, George Soros's daughter's house. I mean, they're just close is what I'm trying to say. I mean, you know, are they just strangers having a great time when they see each other? And so then you're looking at, you know, Rabbi Saperstein, and you think, who is this man? You know, I want to know a little bit about him. And you find out that in August of 2008, that Saperstein delivered the invocation at the Democratic National Convention, the final session, before Senator Barack Obama was accepted as the party nomination for president. And he was placed, in February 2009, he was named to President Obama's Council for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnership. And it's like, okay, all right. And I can't help but think about this. You can pull that down. I can't help but think about this. You know, there's one thing about that was said in an earlier piece that you heard that his father, the CBN News reporter, said, my father always told me history repeats itself. And what is the big thing going on right now? Well, the big thing going on, one of the big things going on is that they want Israel's land. There's people in the earth right now that just want Israel to be out of the way. Yes, they want America to be out of the way too, at least the Constitution, not the resources. They want the resources. And when I get back, I want to talk about that because this happened before, and you can read about it in the Bible. This whole scenario seems to have happened before, and it just kind of makes you wonder, is this history repeating itself? We're looking at, you know, this, you know, history repeats itself. It just does. But biblically, you know, what is a biblical perspective of what's going on right now in the world? And looking at JJ, you know, the Jews, Jesus and the Jews, or the church and the Jews, how does it end for us? Is it good? Is it going to be bad? Mm-hmm. Is it persecution? And right now it's persecution across the globe. But there was this particular king. He was a Jewish king. And his name was Ahab. He was his King Ahab. And so he was over Israel. And he had a wife. He married this particular wife because he thought, and his father thought, by them getting married, that kind of merged their kingdoms together and kind of, you know, have bigger power or whatever.
It seemed right.
It seemed right. Mm-hmm. And even though she came with additional gods, mm-hmm. like he already had some others he shouldn't have had, and her name was Jezebel. And so you have this man and woman, you know, I guess you'd call him A for short, and her Jez, you know, but, or Jizza. Anyway, but you had Ahab and Jezebel, and these are king. This is a king over Israel, over Jews, a Jewish king over a Jewish people under an awesome God. And so he was out one day riding around in his Mercedes. getting around. And he was passing this piece of property, and he thought, you know what? This is a very fruitful place, Israel. No, I'm sorry. This is a very fruitful place. This is a blessed land. I like this piece of land. Who owns this? Who's the owner of this piece of land over here? Who is this? Oh, it's Naboth. He owns the land right here. Tell him I want to sell it to him. I got a deal for him. I mean, I want this, you know, I want this piece of land. So it's about a land. Understand that. We're talking about history repeating itself. So this Jewish king who married this non-Jewish wife for the purpose of making his wealth and power greater, he thought, wanted more. He wanted a piece of land, and the owner of this land was Naboth. That's N-A-B-O-T-H. You can look him up. And when he met with Naboth, he says, hey, because, you know, I'm sure he's flaunting his authority. You know, I am the sheriff around here. You know, I am the king around here. I don't know, whatever. And he was. And thank God for Naboth when he says, oh, you know, I want your land. I'll switch something out with you, another piece of land. And Naboth says, I can't. I'm not going to give my land up. Yeah. He says, this is my father's inheritance to me. I mean, think about that. This is my father's inheritance. And at that point, the king should have said, that's right. Yeah, I shouldn't mess with that.
That's right.
But the thing was, he was an ungodly king over Israel. He had a lot of gods, but it wasn't capital G God. Ahab provoked God. I mean, he actually provoked the creator of the universe. So you can be a Jew and you can provoke the creator of the universe. Got it? You have to understand this. And so he actually is doing things with God's folks that, and these other gods that God's just, I mean, he's just like poking his finger in the chest of God, you know, provoking. And he's worshiping all these other foreign gods, and he's shocked. I mean, this is the first time that anybody ever told the leader of that country, no. You know what I'm saying? Potentially. Because you notice what happens when you talk to Ahab, that he's shocked that somebody told him no. I mean, it's a new thing. Getting corrected or heckled. You know, something happening. It's like, Naboth, he thought he said no, but he heckled me in front of everybody. And so...
Doesn't he know I'm the king?
Doesn't he know I'm the king? And so he goes home. This is a true story. So he goes to the pad, back to the house, the king.
Crib.
And he's laying back on his, you know, huge waterbed. They don't have those anyway. He had his air number set under pouting. And he's upset. He's just shocked. I mean, this king is undone emotionally because somebody just said, I can't, this is my father's inheritance. I can't give you the land. He wasn't being angry. BB's not being mean. I mean, Naboth's not being mean. He's just saying, I can't give you the land. You can't have the land. This is my father's inheritance. And so his wife comes in, the one that he married for power, and Jezebel, and she comes into the king's, pad where he was sleeping at. And she looks at him and she goes, do you know what this is going to do to my reputation around here? You know, that's not how kings are supposed to act. Get out there and do like I told you. Mm-hmm. You know, be king. Like King George's mama told him.
Yeah.
Time for you to be king. I mean, she's more concerned about what it's going to look like. That's Jezebel, by the way, just so you know. They're all concerned about what it looks like, and they're serious about what it looks like. This is not how kings act. And so he's going, and she's like, what's going on? Well, you know, I wanted Israel, the land Israel, and BB, Naboth, told me I couldn't have it. Oh, okay. No, we're talking about. No. He said, I want this piece of property that Naboth has, and he won't let me have it. Isn't it amazing how all these folks walking around under darkness want Naboth's property? Mm-hmm. They want that piece of land, that little piece of real estate called Israel, that's 70 miles wide, probably at its widest point. You got all the land in the world, Ahab, but you want Israel. Well, think about it. You're not satisfied, and now you went home, and you're all pouting and stuff, and all of a sudden Jezebel comes in and says, I'll get it for you. I'll get you the land. Listen, every other president has tried to get this land, but I can get the land for you. I can get the land for you. All I need is your authority. If you'll give me the mic and let C-SPAN cover it, I can write a letter in your name. Me and Valerie are going to work this puppy out. We're going to write a letter, and we're going to speak on your behalf, and you're going to be the president that got Naboth's property.
Wow.
I don't care what BB's saying. Listen, just give me the ring. Let me write a letter. And what I'm going to say is going to be something. But I need you to do one thing. I need you to appoint Rabbi David Saperstein. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be strange because we've never appointed. Just bring him and set him between two scoundrels. That's what she did. She wrote a letter to everyone, and she set this whole thing up. Everybody's thinking, this is great. Look, this is wonderful stuff that's being said. And we just want to celebrate Israel here. We want to celebrate Bibi, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We just want to celebrate him. We want to celebrate Naboth. That's what they were really saying. But it wasn't. They really weren't celebrating him. They weren't celebrating his inheritance. They weren't celebrating his land. They wanted his land. But they were all of a sudden, the narrative on C-SPAN and all these places changed. And now they're talking all good about Naboth. And it's like, you know, 5 minutes ago, you were talking about taking his land. And now you and your husband had a meeting in the back room. And now he gave you the ring. And now you went on TV and you're talking in his name, in the president's name. And you're talking in the Secretary of State's name when their position's higher than your position. They're Secretary of State and the President of the United States. And it's like, where is Ahab at? You know, he's the king. You know, where's the leader here? And he's going, well, she's going to get it for me. She's going to get this land for me. And so he throws this big party. This is really what happened. Mm. And so Naboth gets a little, you know, he watches C-SPAN or something, the news, and he finds out, man, they're throwing a party for me. They're throwing a party for me. And so, you know, he gets all dressed up and he goes down there and he has no idea. It's a lie. The whole thing is a lie. It's put together by somebody who wants to take the land. And so he goes and he shows up. And they set him between two, literally, this is the word in the Bible, two scoundrels.
That's right.
I'm not making that up. It's two scoundrels. Okay. So you have two scandalous Jews on both sides of a godly Jew. Does that make sense? And yeah. So they're all Jews. But Naboth was the one in right standing. The two scoundrels, the king and the queen, they are off. And are the wife of Ahab. And so all of a sudden they bring him in, and as soon as they have this big party for him, and that's what's happening. I just feel down in my gut right now, in my spirit, I feel like they're throwing this party right now for Israel. And a lot of people come and understand this is going to be between, you know, Ahab, Jezebel, God, and those scoundrels, because God's going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the whole party switches, and they start accusing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They start accusing I'm just kind of comparing the two, contrast. They start accusing Naboth, who said, I can't give my land up. This is my father's inheritance. And that's what Israel is, just so you know that. This is God's inheritance to the Jewish people. So it's the same parallel. And then she says, I want you scoundrels to accuse him of blaspheming God. Mm-hmm. So when all the people who don't know what's going on, who showed up for the party that she put together, I want you to stand up and say, this guy that we're honoring blasphemed God. And they knew the moment that happened, they would kill Naboth. And so the people were used. They used the people. They lied to the people. They lied to Naboth. They had two set men on both sides of this rightly godly Jew that was there, Naboth, who they wanted his land. And the people who killed Naboth were lied to. And so they actually were used by this perverted authority to do their will. But the people didn't know, but God knew. And so then she comes back and she gives them the land. And so she gets Naboth's land. And you think, she got it. It's like, no, this is what happened. This is what God did. God was just done with it at this point. God's like, I'm going to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And so God, in the middle of, you don't even know this is even going on. I mean, all the judges are just like her, just like him. They appointed all these terrible judges, all these leaders across the nation of Israel was bad and just like them and doing these evil things, and things are happening just like that. And all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, God raises up someone, and they don't even know what's even happening. And God prophesies and speaks to Ahab, and he tells him, you're going to die for this. You're going to die for taking this property. You can't do that. You took it unrighteously. You shed innocent blood on this land. And that's what's happening today. When you see these missiles going into Israel, they're fighting for the land. They want Naboth's land. When you see Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stand up and say, you can't have my father's inheritance to us.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. Mm. And what happened one day when Ahab was out fighting in a war, somebody shot an arrow up in the air, and it just happened to land right between a crack in his armor, and it killed him. And he was in a chariot, and all of his blood, his own blood, poured out on Naboth's property. In other words, comparing that contrast, then his blood would have poured out. If somebody tried to take Israel's land, their blood will end up being on that land. Wow. And then this particular guy that God raised up to be able to deal with Jezebel, is named Jehu. And Jehu's the one's going to restructure government. He's going to restructure the heads. Literally, because they took the heads of everybody. And when he went and dealt with Jezebel, he just went to her place, and she had a high rise. And she was up high in the tower, putting on makeup, fixing to seduce this particular guy that's come in there. And this is a true story. And then he keeps her distance. And that's the thing you have to understand about the spirit. It is so seducing, you got to turn your head when they talk. You cannot let all those things come in, because it'll just draw you in. And he says, just throw her out. He says, just throw her out. And so These guys just threw her out. She landed down. Horses trampled her. Dogs ate her. The only thing left was her, her feet and her hands. Mm-hmm. That's the end when you start messing with Naboth's property. When you try to take, when you try to put a scheme together to take Israel, to take the land, it's not going to end well for everybody who tries to do that. I want to encourage you. As the church, we got to keep our ears alert. We got to pray for the protection of Israel and let God see us standing up against anybody who's saying they want to shed Naboth's blood on his inheritance. We are really kind of getting a viewpoint of, you know, what should our perspective be? And this makes me think of this. It makes me think about when the writer of Acts was writing in chapter 12, Acts chapter 12, and King Herod decided all of a sudden, the leader decided all of a sudden, that he was going to begin to persecute the church. He just decided. I mean, think about this. You know, I think I'm going to persecute the church. I mean, that's what he's like. And the church is so shocked all the time. Can you believe that all of a sudden, I mean, we were friends and now we're like, you know, it's the devil. It's the devil, man. And so what he did was he had James, the brother of Jesus, put to death. I mean, think about that. So the leader all of a sudden says, you know, we're going to start persecuting the church. It's like, you know, you can't, you know, bake cakes anymore or something. I don't know. And everybody's all in a hissy about it. They killed James, the brother of John. And this is what they said. They said, when King Herod saw that this pleased the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter. And right now, the silent majority, you're going to have to wake up. Listen, there's a whole bunch of you. There's a whole bunch of you that are sitting quietly in a cave, in a crack, in a crevice, in a jaw. And you're going, man, I hope this works out. You know, I don't want to stand out. And you have a few people that are shouting out loud. They're pleased with how Israel's being treated, how religious freedom is being taken away in America, how First Amendment rights are being violated. And just like Herod, when today's leaders look and they think, hey, this seems to please the people. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to proceed and continue to go on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like you. I just don't like to argue. One is because God's watching you, and it's like how foolish it looks to argue. You know, just allow people to not like you or whatever. But right now, because the church is so silent, the majority, this huge thing called the church in America, it's not saying anything. And so the assumption of Herod is that you're pleased. Because think about it. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, silence in the face of evil is evil. Why? Because when evilness is proceeding and we do not show any displeasure to it, then the assumption is the four or five folks that find pleasure in the killing of James and the arrest of Peter, the assumption of the political Herod, King Herod, is that everybody likes this. Because if you didn't like it, you would say something. And it almost makes me think, as I was meditating on this, because it's just, I mean, who wants, you know, it's just what we're called to do. And so then you think, whoa, this is exactly what Jesus was talking about when he was telling us, man, you've got to understand that this puppy comes with persecution. And he says very specifically on the Sermon on the Mount in James chapter 5, he says, blessed are you. Blessed are those. This is Matthew chapter 5, verse 10. He said, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of things against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before me. And trying to dodge persecution is like trying to dodge the will of God. The reason why Naboth's being persecuted, the reason why Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as that example, being persecuted, because he's standing up for the inheritance, the land.
Yeah.
And when you stand up for God, and when you stand up for the Constitution that gives you the right in this country to stand up for God, you're going to be persecuted. And they're going to say all kinds of evil things about you. I mean, the worst thing is truth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're sinners saved by God. I mean, that's who we are. But he's still God. And that's what we love about him so much, is that when I was lost and undone and in darkness and, you know, trying to do everything I can to find personal fulfillment and found none, God found me and called me. And he forgave me, and he called me his son. When nobody would claim me, he called me son. And he forgave me. He forgave me of everything I've ever done wrong. And he says, you're mine. And he began to raise me and train me up and speak into my life. And I'm here today because of him. So it's not the fact of our faults, our frailties, our mistakes, or people persecuting us or saying all kinds of evil things against us. We're just going to have to stand up and understand this whole thing comes with persecution. That's what the enemy does. I mean, he cannot lay a hand on you unless God allows it. But understand that even if God allows it, even if he doesn't deliver you from the fiery furnace, he's still God. Mm-hmm. And eternity is what we're living for. And now is the time. The silent majority that's out here across America, it's not wrong for you to stand up. Yeah, they're going to talk bad about you. Yeah, they're going to accuse you of doing things wrong when you're doing them right. They're going to accuse you of being dark when you're light. They're going to accuse you of the opposite of what you're doing. I mean, look at Israel. Israel's defending herself, and they're saying that she's the aggressor. Don't get blown away. Realize we got to stand up like Israel for our inheritance, what God has given us. We got to say, you know what? I messed marriage up, you know, I messed family up, but I went to God's word and found out I know how to do it now. And so I'm going to repent. I'm going to begin to live my marriage and my family and my business and my life. I'm going to live it for my God the way he says. It's called repentance. He says, repent and a time of refreshing will come upon you. But we have to stand up. What's going to happen? Everybody that did not choose to repent, that did not choose to look into God's way, who did not make Jesus Christ the Lord of their life, who wants to continue to walk in darkness as the verdict is in, as Jesus has said in John chapter 3, they're going to persecute you because their mouth is overtaken, their tongue is overtaken by the one who's got them captive in hell to do his will. They're going to say things out of their mouth. You're going to be shocked. But just keep serving God. You know, stand up for what's right, because we're coming into a day, and we'll be talking more about in a future program, that you're just going to have to take a stand for what's right, even though you personally outside of God are not right, but you're right, made right because of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He gave us the gift of rightness, the gift of righteousness through his shed blood when we receive the finished work on the cross of Christ. And why we teach and preach and help people to bring justice is so that God can put things back in his right order, not to write people off. It's to let them know that God loves them, has a plan for their life, and he wants to write them in. Will it come with persecution? Yes. The question is, we shouldn't be concerned if we're being persecuted. Our concern would be, I lived the last 5 years of my life and nothing negative happened to me.
Wow.
Not one word was said to me. Did I even stand up for him at all? And the greatest persecution of all, believe it or not, comes from the religious folks. It comes from the people that are caught up in their own abilities and their own. They have no compassion for human beings. But it's okay. Understand, he says, blessed are those who do this, for such will be called the sons of God. It's time for the sons and daughters of God to rise up and say, you know what? We're going to stand. Even if he doesn't deliver America from the fire, we're going to stand because he's God no matter what. And I believe we're going to see a third great awakening. God bless. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFNTV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light.